If you're listening to this podcast, you must recognize the value of asking questions. At Aramco, our questions help us engineer a better future. How can today's resources fuel our shared tomorrow? How can we deliver energy to a world that can't stop? How can we deliver one of the fuels of the future? How can we sow curiosity to harvest ingenuity? To learn more about how innovation drives us forward, visit aramco.com/poweredbyhow.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, December 16th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Here's a quick math problem for you. On a road trip from Orlando, Florida to Washington, D.C., which electric vehicle do you think would arrive first? One with a battery range of 300 miles that takes about an hour to charge? Or an EV with half that range, but that charges in just 15 minutes? If you'd rather not do the math yourself, don't worry. On today's show, our tech columnist Christopher Mims will join us with the answer and explain why a key to broad adoption of EVs could come from the racetrack. That's after these headlines. The U.S. says it's adding China's most advanced memory chip manufacturer, Yangtze Memory, to an export blacklist. The move ratchets up efforts by Washington to suppress Beijing's development of semiconductors that could be used for things like artificial intelligence and advanced weapons. But the move by the Commerce Department could further disrupt the business of companies that make chip manufacturing equipment, which were already affected by earlier bans. TikTok is facing an uncertain future on government devices. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi remained noncommittal yesterday on whether her chamber would vote on a bill to ban the popular app from smartphones and other electronics issued by the federal government. On Wednesday, the Senate voted to ban it amid rising concerns that the Chinese-owned app could give Beijing access to Americans' data, something TikTok has said it would never do. Meanwhile, a group of 15 state attorneys general is demanding that Apple and Google raise TikTok's content ratings on their app stores. In a letter this week, state officials, all Republican, said TikTok frequently contains adult content, including about sex and drug use. They want the app to be stripped of its current teen classification on Google Play Store and Apple's App Store. The attorneys general warned of legal action if TikTok's rating isn't addressed. A TikTok spokesman said the company is committed to supporting the safety and well-being of teens. Google and Apple didn't respond to requests for comment. And cryptocurrencies are struggling, but many supporters have always said that the underlying blockchain technology would have far-reaching uses beyond digital currencies. That's because the digital record of a blockchain can be used to track items through complex supply chains, with the potential of transforming how industries operate. So far, though, that hasn't happened. Walmart's attempt to track groceries on the blockchain is running, but slowly. While an initiative run by IBM and shipping giant Maersk was discontinued last month, analysts say it's clear corporate interest in blockchain technology is waning. Isabel Bousquet, who covers enterprise technology for the WSJ's CIO Journal, has more.
The bottom line is that these ambitious, big enterprise blockchain projects, especially those designed to track assets through really complicated supply chains, only work if you have critical mass of participation from everyone in the supply chain. There was a lot of interest in this 4 to 5 years ago, spurred on by the excitement around crypto. And the problem was a lot of companies approach this as, hey, there's this new technology, what can we do with it? Rather than we have an actual business problem we need to solve with this. They have ways of tracking assets through supply chains. They have shared databases that can do the same thing you can do on blockchain in a cheaper and more simple way.
You can hear more from Isabel on this morning's edition of our sister podcast, What's News? All right, coming up, to supercharge the EV industry, car companies are turning to the racetrack. We'll discuss what that means for regular drivers after the break.
If you're listening to this podcast, you must recognize the value of asking questions. At Aramco, our questions help us engineer a better future. How can today's resources fuel our shared tomorrow? How can we deliver energy to a world that can't stop? How can we deliver one of the fuels of the future? How can we sow curiosity to harvest ingenuity? To learn more about how innovation drives us forward, visit aramco.com/poweredbyhow.
We're off to the races. Except this race, Formula E's Ypres in New York this past summer, might sound a little different from what you'd expect to hear. Because it's the sound of electric race cars. No vrooming gas engines here. Historically, the racetrack has played an important role in the development of modern cars. Rearview mirrors, seat belts, and anti-lock brakes all have their origins in race cars. And it's no different with today's electric models, especially as car companies work to address a key drawback of EVs, charging them. Our tech columnist Christopher Mims has been speaking to experts learning from the racetrack and even checking out the Speedway himself. And he joins me now. Hi, Christopher. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Zoe.
So, Christopher, you went to one of these Formula E races. What was it like?
It's really enjoyable. It's a full-on race, but you're right there next to the track. You can get so much closer because these cars are almost whisper quiet. You know, their tires make more noise than their engines do, which are almost silent. So it's just this very intimate, very fast race experience.
Okay, let's talk about how this technology gets out of Formula E and maybe on to our roads. Why do regular car companies care about developing these Formula E cars? I mean, do they learn anything from the process?
A lot of what they learn from electric vehicles, believe it or not, is in the software, and it's in how to manage energy. You know, the same things that you have to do to make sure that your car doesn't run out of energy on a race, you might want to do to make sure your car makes it to the next charging station. I spoke with Nissan's Tommaso Volpe about this sort of thing. He manages the company's motorsports team, and here's what he told me.
If you think about how much of the performance of an electric vehicle depends on software and how much easier can be transferred the learnings that we have behind the energy management, I mean, even a normal car, an electric vehicle, can be utilized in a much more flexible way if you just change the software and the way the power is utilized by the car compared to an internal combustion engine that can be fine-tuned, but the power output is more rigid.
A lot of what he's talking about is the fact that with an electric car, there's just so much more flexibility that can be achieved in software. So you can use code to make a car accelerate better or be better at regenerative braking or even accept charge faster when you're trying to charge it at home.
When it comes to something like the battery efficiency, apart from race car drivers, why does it matter if it takes a long time for EVs to charge?
It really comes down to acceptance by the public. If it takes cars a long time to charge, people are really hesitant to buy them because they realize that they're not going to be great for road trips. And they might also say to themselves, hey, I'm one of the 37% of Americans that doesn't have a garage to park my car in at night. Where am I going to charge up and how long is it going to take? But there's actually another reason that I learned about when I spoke to Eric Waxman, who's the director of the Maryland Energy Innovation Institute at the University of Maryland. And just listen to this other reason that he gives.
The other aspect is the greater the range of the batteries, right, or of your electric vehicle is, the heavier the battery is. And you start using more and more of the energy to propel the weight of the battery.
So the battery that charges faster doesn't need to get you as far on a single charge because stopping to charge it won't be nearly as much of a pain.
Okay, so how do we make faster charging batteries then?
A big part of what it will take to make faster charging batteries is better battery technology. Usually when we hear better battery tech, it means batteries that, you know, just can take you further. But this is innovation in a different direction. It's batteries that can accept charge more quickly. And there's a ton of innovations coming here in the next 3 to 10 years. There are silicon in the anode instead of graphite, which can accept the electrons a lot faster. There's also coming solid state batteries, which are so-called, you know, lithium metal batteries, where there's no liquid in them at all. And these batteries could charge faster and they could also be a lot more energy dense.
Let's talk about cost then. I mean, what would having these faster charging batteries mean for the cost of an electric vehicle overall?
One of the key things to know about batteries these days is that the price per cell or per pack, which is what goes into the car, has stopped going down. So automakers can't count on cheaper batteries to make cheaper electric vehicles in the future. But if you could have just less batteries, maybe half as many batteries in a vehicle, because users find that acceptable because they can charge it so much more quickly, then it could cost, you know, $6,000-$10,000 less, maybe even more once you include the margin for the automaker.
What is that going to mean in terms of the comparison in cost between an electric vehicle and a gas-powered vehicle?
Well, I actually put that question to Eric Waxman, and here's what he said.
In the future, the cost of electric cars could be less than the cost of cars today. Basically, the electric motor is less expensive than the internal combustion engine. There's no maintenance to speak of. And the primary difference is the cost of the batteries. If we had lower cost batteries, then the cost of electric vehicle would in fact be less than a current internal combustion engine vehicle today.
I mean, so at the moment, a lot of electric vehicles are kind of the realm of wealthier people. Would that change? And how quickly are we looking at that shift?
This matters a lot because you got to keep in mind that worldwide there's 1.4 billion cars on Earth, and most of them are owned by people who can't afford a $45,000 or $50,000 premium electric vehicle in the US, much less luxury. So if we are going to shift the entire world's auto fleet to electric vehicles and make them accessible to everybody, they've got to fall in price a lot. They've got to be the same price as a gasoline vehicle, you know, rolling right off the showroom floor, or hopefully in the future, they'll be less. And then it's a no-brainer to make that switch.
One other issue here, we could get, you know, cheaper, faster charging batteries that make electric vehicles more acceptable to some consumers. But where do you charge them? Because we don't have a ton of charging infrastructure in this country, at least at the moment.
So the infrastructure bill that passed in November 2021 includes $7.5 billion for new charging stations all across America. The eventual goal is 500,000 charging stations. Currently, the U.S. has about 50,000, and only about 5,000 are the fast charging stations that would be required to get vehicles to charge in a reasonable amount of time. So we have a long way to go in terms of building out a powerful and ubiquitous charging infrastructure that would enable us to have, you know, all of our vehicles charging quickly whenever we want.
All right, that's our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Christopher, thanks so much for bringing us this story.
Zoe, always a pleasure.
If you want to learn more about the developments of fast-charging EV batteries and the role the racetrack played, check out Christopher's latest column this Saturday. And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our producer is Julie Chang. We had production assistance from Ariana Osperu. Our executive producer is Chris Zinsley. And I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
I'm Paul Jugot, and you can join me, Kim Strassel, Kyle Peterson, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.